Talofa lover, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Suisuki. Coming up.
Most of these houses here, they when it's high tides, the sea pretty much come and cover their areas.
Families in Tonga continue to struggle 2 years after the eruption and tsunami. Also,
see the attendance from these high-level delegates is very heartwarming and comforting for us.
For the very first time, the Cook Islands will be celebrating Pride Week. And an upcoming charity event raises funds to help families access speech therapy sessions. 2 years since the tsunami following the Hunga Tonga Hungaha by underwater volcano eruption, everyday life for many Tongan families continues to be a struggle. While rehabilitation efforts have been swift, a spokesperson from an NGO says that coastal urban areas need urgent refocus. Live and Learn Tonga Country Manager Mr. Alani Afu says shelter, food security and water, sanitation and hygiene or wash facilities have been neglected. Mr. Afu spoke with Rachel Nath and told her the stark reality for those living in the wake of these disasters.
The communities that we focus at the moment in the main island, that they are near the coast in the urban area, they are the ones who are struggling with the, in terms of shelters and wash facilities. Most of these houses here, they when it's high tides, the sea pretty much come and cover their wash areas and even the water. You just hop up from the house to the water. So these are the areas that we wanted to focus on with our current projects. We provide septic tank, we provide maintenance of the wash facilities, and also, of course, in terms of food security, we wanted to also provide that in their particular communities. So their community there, it's located around Patangata, Papua, and Sopu. So these one here, it's a lowland area.
And what's shelter, food security, and wash facilities like in the rural areas?
In the rural area, in terms of food security, they just need the assistance in terms of supplying seedlings and tree planting and equipment and so forth. The land is there, they can be able to plant and continue to harvest and maybe make a sustainable food supply for their communities.
And what kind of assistance has been given to communities and households?
Most of the communities that we have visited, there were a lot of water pump at the communities that are no longer functioning. The water tank storage for the community are not enough to sustain or to provide the water that that particular community needs on a daily basis. Some are very old, some are no longer operate, and the village water committee as well, they also need capacity building on how to run the water operations in a sustainable way. At the residential house level, the government is working on through their national water tank projects. Hopefully they can cover most of them at the household level. But the community level in terms of water assets, that's where most of the needs at the moment that we are trying to address.
And you had mentioned that the urban areas are not seeing enough assistance.
So far, I think the urban area are also neglected in this kind of assistance. Most of the assistance goes to the outer islands and also to the rural areas. But we are trying also to accommodate the urban areas as well, especially those villages that's close to the coast. They were also affected by the tsunami as well.
So as of now, what efforts are underway to assist people towards rehabilitation?
I think they probably almost complete the water tank, the national water tank project, where they distributed the water tank to all of the islands. They are also now moving into providing a wash facility, a complete wash facility, to each of the islands here in Tongatapu. I think the last I heard, if I remember correctly, the main island here in Tongatapu, there's about 1,500 full wash facility that they will build for the main island. I'm not sure about the numbers that goes to the out islands. But that's where they are with other projects in the pipeline. With the NGO level, there are few NGO who are also working in the WASH sector and also the food security sector as well. But for us, our current project at the moment, we also focus heavily on food security and WASH maintenance action.
Live and Learn Tonga is working with other local NGOs to form a partnership with government and the private sector to collectively reach out to international donors and humanitarian organisations to provide urgent assistance in Tonga. An inaugural Pride Week will be held in Rarotonga, celebrating 1 year since the Cook Islands decriminalised same-sex relations. Prior to the amendments, homosexuality was punishable by up to 5 years in jail. Tiana Haxton spoke to leading Pride figures in the community to talk about the historic law change.
April the 14th, 2023 was a day for the history books as the Cook Islands government made an amendment removing discriminatory clauses from the 1969 Crimes Bill. Valerie Witchman, president of Te Tiari Association at the time, said it was bigger than just changing the law.
The greater impact that it has is in terms of us as a nation maturing to a point where we can recognise certain fundamental human rights. And what that means is that everyone is now treated equally under the law. And for future generations, this is such a huge achievement.
As the anniversary draws near, the nation's LGBT plus community are reflecting on the day it all happened. Carla Eggleton, the former president of Pride Cook Islands, remembers feeling nervous and anxious awaiting the final decision.
And even then, we didn't know what to expect. We were debating all day long and discussing what if it went this way and what if it goes the other way. And so while we had champagne on ice at the same time, there was also some nail biting in the room.
A group of representatives sat in Parliament to witness the passing of the amendment, which decriminalised homosexuality in the Cook Islands.
It was something that we'll never forget. And as they passed the bill and the Speaker hit his gavel, we barely made it out the door before emotions took over.
Pride Cook Islands was founded specifically to campaign for the law change. Over the past year, they have been planning a grand celebration to mark the one-year anniversary since decriminalisation. Anuanua Week, or Rainbow Week, kicks off this weekend under the new president, Dean Kapitangata. Kapitangata says they hope to break the stigma surrounding the rainbow community and promote inclusivity and equality.
Regardless of the country or society, Pride Week always carries stigmatism, regardless of how progressive the country is. So we hope to show that it is not just about marches and riots, but it's also about having fun and appreciating one another, and that everybody can look forward to every single year.
Kapitangata says the event is monumental, not only for the Cook Islands, but for the entire Pacific region. Political delegations from New Zealand and Australia will be in attendance alongside leading figures in the international Pride community. The new president of Te Tiari Association, Tatiana Utanga, says they are humbled by the support from across the globe.
To see the attendance from these high-level delegates is very heartwarming and comforting for us to show our Cook Islands community that we have the backing of people outside of our community, outside of our nation, who support us and who want to see us grow in terms of progress.
The festivities begin this weekend with a range of activities and events exploring the diversity of LGBT plus communities and their rights across the Pacific.
The Fijian Drill women's team are on track to play in the semi-finals of the Super W competition. A win against the Rebels on Saturday in Melbourne will give them a home semi-final in Suva next week. And the World Rugby Challenge Tournament winner in Samoa will be decided when the unbeaten teams, the Fiji Warriors, face Japan A on Monday afternoon in Apia. Elias Atora has more.
Brewer Women head coach Mosese Rauluni says while a home semi-final would be great for the team, he wants the players to focus on what they need to do against the Rebels and get a win this weekend.
Totally not even think about the final. You know, we've got to worry about this game. No one will be hurt from losing to the Reds, but they're a good team. You know, they've only lost their game by not much, so they'll fight till the end. So all we've got to think about is our processes this weekend, doing the right things, not trying to go out of our game plan, get the points on the board every time we get into the 22, hopefully. You know, come out with a win, and then we'll worry about the semi and we play in Super later.
Rauluni says executing possession into points and being patient with the ball is what the team will need to do to win.
When we get into their 22, their half, just executing. I think last weekend we had, I think, about 14 entries into their 22, and we only executed, I think, four times. So a lot of the times we either drop the ball and that. So we've got to hold on, be more patient with the ball and come away with the points. That's a big thing we've talked about this, you know, the start of this week, just executing better when we get into their green zone and putting the pressure on the opposition.
In other sports news, the Japanese A team looks like the team to beat in the World Rugby Challenge in Apia, Samoa. The Japanese lead the competition after big 48-5 win over Samoa on Wednesday, scoring 8 tries in the process. Fiji Warriors scraped past Tonga in the earlier game at Apia Park, recording a 29-17 win. Their clash on Monday afternoon could decide who claims the title for 2024. The Warriors have successfully defended the title over the last 2 years. In tennis, Pacific teams are competing in 3 different tournaments this weekend. The North Pacific Qualifiers is currently being held in Saipan, Northern Marianas. Oceania Tennis said a total of 74 budding players hailing from the Federated States of Micronesia, Guam, Nauru, Palau, and the Northern Mariana Islands are participating at the event across the under-14, under-16 individual categories, and under-12 team events. Junior tennis players from some of the other Pacific countries are also competing at the East Pacific Regional Championships in Tahiti. The event is being held from April 8th to the 16th, with players traveling in from Fiji, Tonga, Cook Islands, and Samoa. In China, the Pacific Oceania Billie Jean King Cup team are competing in Changsha this weekend. The team is made up of Tarani Kamoe, Sourice Breen and Ruby Coffin of Fiji, Samoa's Eleanor Schuster and Tahiti's Mahetia Busi. Meanwhile, Nauru's Australian Football League president Wiley Detenamo says they are hoping to get a proper grass field that would help the sport host tournaments at home.
Because our field here, nobody would want to play here because we don't have grass on the field. It's just gravel. The issue is land. It's trying to get landowner. And then from there, we can talk with the Minister for Infrastructure and all that and Minister for Sports. And then we'll try to get a deal with Aussie. Because they do want to help us build a second field because that's the thing that we are lacking at the moment.
Detenamo says they would love to host Pacific teams, Fiji, Tonga, Vanuatu and Papua New Guinea at home in the future if they can get a proper grass field.
A charity event in South Auckland is raising funds to support autistic children and their families who are struggling to access speech therapy services. Led by the support group ASD Dads, the Run for Autism event promises to be a day filled with unity, compassion and action as participants lace up, ready to make a difference in the lives of ASD families. I caught up with the founder of ASD Dads, Jordan Ikitule, to talk about the upcoming event.
So our Run for Autism charity event for a lot of our kids and a lot of our families have expressed that they're struggling to pay for speech therapy, and it's for many reasons. It could be like a big delay in the diagnosis or a big delay in funding. So we've learned that the longer it takes for our kids to get into speech therapy, the less effective it will be. And we're also fundraising to continue to run free community events for our families with autism.
I'll get back to you on the financial strains of paying for speech therapy sessions, but what's your personal connection with autism? Is it something that impacts you directly?
Yeah, my son, he's 5, a beautiful boy, and he's he's got autism and global development delay, so something that I'm really passionate about.
How old was he when he was diagnosed with autism?
He was 3 years old when he got the diagnosis.
What was your reaction when you found out about your son's condition?
Oh, we were like happy and also like a bit of mixed emotions, because we were sort of like knew something was up, but we weren't too sure. And then once we finally got diagnosed, we were like a bit of relief, because we knew that we could start adapting and changing our parenting style and our lives around just to suit our son. So it was a bit of a relief and then also a bit of a mixed emotion.
And so setting up ASD Dads, was that like a response to the struggles that you faced while trying to navigate the existing support systems?
Yeah, exactly. It was real difficult. We found it like real difficult to navigate through the system and what sort of supports there were out there, and connecting with other families or like-minded people walking a similar journey. So for me, when I decided to create ASD Dads, I didn't know it was such a big need. So we started in September last year. I just put out a video and said that I want to start this dads group, a safe space for fathers with autistic children to just come in Talanoa and be around, you know, be in a safe space around other fathers. And it pretty much blew up from that first video. And yeah, we haven't slowed down since.
How have you been able to break down stigma surrounding autism, especially as a Pasifika person where there's still a lack of awareness around the condition in our community?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a challenge. Like, I know there's some other support groups out there and things, but New Zealand's like way behind, especially in our Pasifika community. We're still like far behind in terms of education, in terms of acceptance, and in terms of awareness. A lot of our communities sort of don't identify what autism is, so we're quite far back. So it's been a bit of a challenge, but it's also something that we are setting up this year to run more classes, not just for the immediate family, but also for the wider family. So when we're taking our kids to things like church or Christmas or birthdays, like our wider family also understand that we need to understand their world and not try and force them into our world.
Absolutely. And just, you know, getting back into the purpose of the fun run, do you have a target of how much you're wanting to raise?
Yeah, our target is quite massive. We want to try and fundraise $100,000, and we want to help out as much families as we can. We didn't realize, I guess, how big the need is, and we're only starting to find out more and more. So the more that we can fundraise, I know we're quite close to the event, but you know, we're faithful and hopeful, and even if we make a fraction of that, as long as we can help another family or other families, then we'll be happy.
You mentioned that there's a big need in addressing autism. How much are families having to fork out for speech therapy services at the moment?
There's a lot of families. There's a lot of families that are, yeah, there's so many families like that are just waiting to get the funding. There's a lot of families that are paying for it privately. There's a lot of Pasifika families that are working overtime to try and make up for that sort of stuff. So, and even for us, we were lucky. We didn't even have speech therapy. We got given a scholarship from Acorn Trust, who are based in Newmarket, and that was like a big blessing for us. But for us personally, we were struggling to sort of get into that space. So, yeah, we were lucky when they gave us a scholarship last year for our son to do free speech therapy. But there's a lot of other families out there that are still waiting and struggling.
Just wondering, you know, besides the financial side of things, and I know that you want to continue with these free events, what else are you hoping will come from the fun run?
Just more awareness and acceptance for our autistic families, especially our kids. Like, it's not easy a lot of times when you're taking your kid out and people don't understand. sometimes they just look at us parents and think, oh man, those parents are useless, or those parents should just discipline their kid. And I think there's just a lack of understanding and awareness. So I just hope that our events, and especially with like the run, that it just raises more awareness for our kids, because it does put a bit of a strain and mental strain on the parents, and then that could affect the family. So for us, it's mainly awareness, acceptance, and then raising funds for the other families that are waiting for that speech therapy.
And just to close off, Aotearoa, what message do you have for Pasifika families who are facing barriers while living with autism?
I would say just stay faithful and keep the faith and keep doing what you're doing. Like, no doubt the families are doing an amazing job, and they're not alone. Like, there's a lot of us out there. We just don't know, because a lot of us tend to stay home or stay behind closed doors. So that's probably the biggest message I just want them to know, is that they're not alone, and try to get in contact with us and try and attend some of our events, because they're made for our families.
That's Pacific Waves for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, to 5-3-4.